A local man is arrested for trying to join ISIS. Meanwhile, a port consultant with radical views on race gets the boot. Plus, movement on downtown development this week on both the north and south banks of the St. John's River. Some of the biggest stories making headlines this week. And good Friday morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio, and now our daily podcast is on iTunes. Just subscribe to it. You can listen to the show of your choice anytime. Just ahead, all the biggest news of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's a preview of this weekend's Veg Fest, plus the artistry of Red Moon Theater, a new festival in town. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and that means it's time for our Media Roundtable. Here today, Eric Smith, former public official who hosts the local program People and Politics. Hi, Eric.
It's great to be on the radio instead of on TV all the time.
Here as well, Tim Gibbons, editor with the Jacksonville Business Journal.
How are you doing today?
Good to see you. And A.G. Gankarski, writer for Folio Weekly and Florida Politics.
Hey, how you doing?
Great to have you guys here. Lots to discuss from the week, but we begin with the top story, a local arrest related to ISIS. Did you hear about this one? The FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office say they arrested 30-year-old Abrab Habibov this week in Jacksonville after following up on a plot to send others overseas to join the Islamic State. Habibov had operated a mall kiosk in the area, but he's originally from Uzbekistan. Two other men were also arrested in this sting. Give us a call with your thoughts about ISIS and the local connection. 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Now, this is a bit complicated, but in a nutshell, Eric Smith, let's begin with you. The Fed saying that this young man and two others were basically conspiring to help others get overseas to join the Islamic State, to fight with ISIS.
Well, it's a very scary proposition and very scary, and bringing it right home to Jacksonville. Of course, my sense is that our city has always been vulnerable because of the high presence of military here, the importance of the port, the everything that went to Iraq came out of the marine logistics came out of Blinn Island, and I think it just tells all of us we've got to be vigilant. There's a war out there. You look at even the terrorist acts have increased by a good 10 or 15% in just the last year, and it's the highest it's ever been since they've been tracking it for the last 46 years. So we need to keep our children close and keep our eyes open and work with our neighbors and the police and the FBI and. That's about all you can do.
At the same time, not to downplay this, but I find it interesting when they say things like, they were skilled at social media, which, we are hopefully here all skilled at social media.
Right. But they said they used that to kind of further their network.
Did. And yeah. That's a valid and possibly scary thing. But on the other hand, a guy working at a kiosk in a mall tweeting stuff isn't quite the same thing as somebody, bringing bombs into an airport.
Right, exactly right. And if you're just tuning in, we're discussing the top stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll go to your calls in a moment.
Well, I'm not trying to scare. I'm just trying to aware.
Got it, Eric.
Good point, Tim.
At 549-2937, as we discuss this local ISIS arrest right off the top, A.G. Gankarski.
Yeah, something interesting. If you talk to the candidates for sheriff, you talk to the mayor, talk to any of these people, they basically are acknowledging that this is a real threat that is going to be with us for a long time. It's something that law enforcement has to take into consideration. And as Eric mentioned, Jacksonville is very vulnerable. I mean, we have two interstates here. We have railroads here. We have a port here. This is, you know, a high-profile place for a locus of such a thing. Regarding social media, social media is a great recruitment and promulgation tool for the kind of people who get drawn into this because they're impressionable, they lack social outlet, and they're looking for something to believe in. And ISIS brands itself that way for people who have other gripes about America. This is something we've discussed before in this program, and unfortunately something we're going to have to discuss again.
ISIS itself is interesting in that it's a, particularly in, as AG is saying, the idea of getting the impressionable. It's not a, you know, go to Pakistan and plan how to crash an airliner sort of thing. It's trying to set up a caliphate. It has a much more, mm-hmm. you know, romantic sort of emotional thing that if you're young and disaffected, it's you know, you can see how it draws people in.
Melissa, here's my question.
Yeah.
And this has been eating at me for months now. When you hear the talking heads of the national media and either the president or someone with the Congress, they ask about ISIS. They answer about ISIL. They ask about ISIS. They say ISIL. What's the difference?
Yes. What do we call this organization? We're going to actually do a segment on that in a week or so with Parvez Ahmed of UNF because there does not seem to be a accord on what to call these terrorists.
There's even a push. I think it was in France where they use a more derogatory Arabic term.
It's Daesh or something like that.
With the idea of saying that not giving them legitimacy, that this is not a true reflection of Islam and it's not a state, so-called an Islamic state is...
Right. Yeah. Let's go to your calls now about the local ISIS arrest. 549-2937. What are your thoughts and questions? Terry in San Marco. Hi, Terry. Good morning.
Hi. Just trying to protect social media and access to the internet and the communications of people globally. A lot of people, conservatives, will say guns don't kill people, people kill people. Well, if you use that argument, you could use it, obviously, with the internet. The internet doesn't kill people, people kill people. So my concern is that the internet kept open, and I'm not in support of in any way, you know, stopping that access.
Sure. And, you know, this week there was another important news story. The FCC ruled on net neutrality, Terry, essentially ruling to keep the internet free and open to everyone, keep the playing field level, as they would say. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Terry.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is with the internet is, you know, keep it open, all of that. But, you know, every time you post something on the internet, you're posting it for posterity. It's being archived. Google archives it. The search engines that will come after it will archive it. And, you know, when somebody posts an incendiary post to social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or some other outlet, it is something that has to be taken seriously. It is something that constitutes a potential threat. And governmental agencies around the world are trying to respond to a multinational threat. And it's really something that is reality. It's the new normal.
It's a really complicated job as well. I mean, you go back to the days of the Secret Service just having to, you know, get people who wrote a letter to the White House sort of thing. And now a Facebook post can be a credible threat. It can also just be some teenager mouthing off. And that how they make that distinction, it's not easy.
Yeah. David in Arlington. Hi, David. What are your thoughts?
I have a question for your panel. I hope they can answer it. I'm wondering why we don't hear more about ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban attacking Israel instead of the West. Thank you very much. I'll take the answer off the air.
Thanks, David. Israel, of course, very concerned about these developments in the Middle East as well. Eric Smith.
That's pretty simple. Israel has way better security than we have in this country, in most countries. They have to or they die. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, and they do that, and they do it quite well. They're the ones that knock down the rockets on a daily basis, and sure, they have incidents, and they have fear, but their system is way better. If you ever went to the airport in Tel Aviv, contrast that with our airport, where, by the way, we have a police force that's not even accredited anymore, but I won't go there right now, but heck, I just did. But Israel... is way better at that. That's my take on it.
Yeah, just getting through security at that airport takes a good bit of time. 549-2937. Tim in Arlington. Go ahead, Tim.
Something bothered me listening to you guys talk about the social media aspect of this thing. If the bad guys are using social media, then our side needs to be using social media to do the opposite of what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? To counteract it. We have to have more resources than these guys. I mean, we have to. There's no way around it.
And I think we do, Tim. I agree with you that we... let's discuss Tim's comments.
The problem is that it has proven to be somewhat difficult. The... CENTCOM in Tampa tried to do a viral video mocking ISIS at one point.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to have a military mindset of, let's do some edgy, hip, sarcastic video and have it run through seven layers of review and,
Right.
So the idea of a true believer on Facebook, on Twitter, is going to have more impact than a State Department spokesman on Twitter.
Yeah, the official social media pushback isn't going to be as effective as, say, what comes from civilians,
yeah.
AG.
Yeah, social media is a destabilizing, disruptive force in the sense that any person on social media can post something that goes viral. I mean, consider the conversations about that dress color yesterday, things like that. I mean, and it's very easy for something to go viral. And, something with ISIS using the iconography that they do, using the images they do, using the memes that they do, it appeals to people who are just sitting there on social media for 8, 10, 12 hours a day with nothing else to do. And that's really something that the government and the government's adjuncts cannot do, like Tim's saying. You could have true patriots posting things that counteract ISIS, but they do that already. You see it from, people on the right and the left, and right now it's a stalemate in this war of memes.
Just to season one very important thing that AG just said, the dress is clearly white and gold.
I'm looking at it right now.
I don't even begin to understand what the question is.
I see blue and black.
I see something yellow with polka dots and then a kind of a fuchsia in there. Of course, I was in politics. I did want to say one thing about the there's a problem and an opportunity. The problem is we all expect instant action. With Bush 1, they went into Iraq. Everybody watched enthralled on TV in 3 days. Next thing you know, the president's on the aircraft carrier with the American flag saying, "We won." And we expect to win, but if you look at America historically in a war, and this is a war, it's not a police action, it's a war, and it's World War III, okay? But historically, it took a while.
But how do you fight World War III? You don't fight it in the 20th century way.
No, you don't fight it, but what I'm saying, we expect things fast. When Pearl Harbor came, it took several years before... we were able to win that war. We have to figure out how to win it. And in this case, it's going to include social media. It's going to include something that we're not used to doing, and that is fighting a war on our own soil. Last time we did that, 1812, if you don't count the German submarine at Ponte Vedra in 1942?
Well, or 2001. I mean, depending on how.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Tim, I'm old.
Let me get a few more calls on the air. CJ in Miramar. Go ahead, CJ.
Yes. I just wanted to remind people that it is actually, we're living, they've done studies, and we're living in one of the safest times to be alive. I mean, we're not dealing with potential nuclear holocausts or any violent wars. Actually, they've done a study, and they said that you have a greater chance of being killed at the hands of a police officer than a terrorist. But I would just like to say that as far as the problem of terrorism, we want to try to be careful not to, continue to, to talk about it too much as far as spreading, because that's what they're trying to do is scare people. That's one thing. And then the other thing is it's really about trying to give people around the world economic opportunity, something, a cause, as far as something to dedicate their life towards, because these people, they take people who are poor, they take people who are uneducated, and then they attack people who are professionals and who are educated. And so it really is about trying to give people empowerment, economic empowerment, and really needs to be about giving more people education and technology, access to technology and speech across the world. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, CJ.
Oh, they're one of the interesting things, if you look at ISIS in particular, and it goes back to what AG said about the appeal of the vision they present. They do get educated people. They get Americans, they get Brits who have been educated, are familiar with Western life, and make a conscious decision that that's what they're looking for.
To reject it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, the last quarter century has basically been a referendum against the Anglo-American world order. And we've seen it so many times, and we see people just basically recoiling against it from the WTO riots of 1999 to today. This is another manifestation of it, just one that's religiousized.
Dennis at the Beaches. Hello, Dennis.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment about the issue of the network neutrality. We're hearing them say, well, it's going to stifle innovation. It's going to curtail development of the broader Internet. These are the same folks, basically conservatives, who are saying, yeah, and the trickle-down economics, the money will come down to the poor folks. The bottom line is economics and technology are just like nature. They will, if there is a demand for something, the something is going to come in and fill the vacuum. And I'm afraid the people that are spouting all this about how it's going to stifle technology are the big corporate heads that are seeing a challenge or a threat to their money-making operation. And I fully support what was done to expand the idea of network neutrality and keeping it within the realm of the everyday person.
Thanks, Dennis. Yeah, and the FCC got quite an earful from grassroots organizers, I think, which played into their decision on that. Modi in Jacksonville. Hi, Modi.
Hey, I just wanted to add a side to all of this that I think we might be missing. And my concern is really with why most of these youths or men get radicalized in the first place. And I think it might have to do with a perception of balance. They might think that somehow their voice, because I think it's just crazy that somebody would want to go join an institution like ISIS. It's just crazy. I mean, there's virtually nothing there that is appealing, in my opinion, anyway. But I think if there's a way that ISIS can be ostracized, that their mission or their story can be put out there and dialogues made so that this children or young men in this environment are we able to reach them and make them understand, and, you know, set a dialogue going where they have a voice, where whatever concerns they have, whether it's religion or education or economics or whatever, these issues can be addressed. That's my point.
Thank you so much, Modi. Let's take one more call on this. Mike in Orange Park. Go ahead, Mike. All right, Mike, give us a call back. David in Arlington. Hi, David.
Hello, how you doing?
Great.
I just heard Mr. Smith's comment about World War III. We're having such a big deal now about this refunding of the Homeland Security Department. Why not just forget about all that stuff and put it into the hands of our military? And give them something to do. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Posse Comitas.
Yep. Eric Smith.
Well, historically, we've had a separation of our military and our police, and I think across the country. We have wonderful police forces. Certainly, there needs to be some serious re-education, but I don't want to get into that sticky bag of weeds, but I do think that Homeland Security, particularly the entity called TSA, is, according to many people that I talk to, including my wife, who was chief of police out there, has been a huge waste of money. That could certainly be reinvented, but I thank the gentleman for his call.
Yeah, thanks for all the calls, and keep calling as we discuss the biggest stories of the week here on our Friday Media Roundtable. Now, also making headlines this week, City Hall cut ties Thursday with a controversial consultant criticized by Mayor Brown for his radical views on race. It was mostly symbolic, the TU reporting the city still has to pay Herbert Barber for a report he wrote on the economic benefits of deepening the St. John's River, but Barber was booted after his excerpts from his book became public. The book, Fall of a Nation, blamed racial integration, interracial marriage, and other factors for what he sees as the declining state of America. Tim.
Okay, so I'm going to look at it this way. The big winner in all of this is Dr. Barber.
Oh, why is that?
Amen.
He's still getting paid. He's still getting paid. And had anybody heard of this guy's book before?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So now he has more. And I'm willing to bet that there are people in Jacksonville who, you know, looked at this book and said, that's a qualification to do the job sort of thing. So I mean, the city had to do something. It clearly, you know, Forleo broke this and then, you know, everybody else in town jumped on it, and the city had to do something.
AG, the piece in Folio noted that this guy called himself Dr. Barber because yes. he had 2 degrees.
Germans do that.
He's fancy. Yeah, and that's really the thing. Apparently, the book was referred to on the LinkedIn profile, and, you know, it's really the issue with a $60,000 contract. Sounds like a lot to us, but in terms of the city budget, it's not very much.
Yeah, you got to wonder. Every company that goes to hire somebody goes on Facebook to find out of it. Did they do any research on this guy at all? I mean, it's almost like hiring Hitler to look at your art museum because he was a reasonably good artist and ignoring other things about him. You know, of course, this guy isn't quite that bad, but
you know, city procurement, I don't even know if they like can do that. I mean, the guy submits the proposal, they look at that, and that's how they make their decision.
Here's the reverse angle. Like, what if they had actually said, okay, we're going to break the contract? There could have been $60,000 in legal fees.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, the issue was in the initial vetting, but once you get past
Let me ask you, too, though. In his book, he talked a lot about, he railed against what he called tree huggers and do-gooders, who he said are, you know, ruining the country, in his view. Environmental groups like the St. John's Riverkeeper immediately cried foul and said, this isn't a good person to be giving unbiased advice about whether we should deepen the river, deepen the port channel to accommodate bigger ships.
They have a point because there's a perception bias there. And, you know, the comments in the book are obviously noxious and beyond the pale.
They do have a point. That alone should disqualify somebody that's got those kinds of views. They can't be objective and independent. I'm also worried about the port's own consultant, because they use the same consultant that every port in the Southeast uses. How can that person be unbiased? When I was on the council, I raised that issue about the guy then. I said, how can he objectively advise Savannah and Jacksonville? He's going to tell them what they want to hear. And now that may be tarring that guy with a bad brush, but, you know, if it looks
like that brings up the larger issue of all of these ports are competing for cargo when the reality is not all of them are going to there will be winners and losers. So you have to do a cost-benefit analysis. Is it worth the investment to try to compete for more cargo if we're not going to attract that much cargo?
Which is the big question. There will be more cargo coming on post-Panamax ships to the eastern U.S. It's not like it gets divvied up evenly.
Right.
So now the other idea is that if we don't deepen the channel,
we don't have a chance at all.
We don't have a chance at all. But to go back to the consultant thing, because I think this is I hate putting on the cynical hat so much. But
yes, pains you.
this port task force overall, and they are good, solid people doing a good job. But does anybody truly expect they're going to come out and say, you know what, after all of this, we shouldn't dredge? So you had the Martin report, the guy who works for, you know, all of the ports, who is in favor of port projects, says we should do it. UNF economist reviews and goes, that report was done properly. They hired this guy for $60,000 to review it again. It's basically a done deal. One of the reasons that probably little vetting was done is because, really, I mean, if the guy came in and said anything, it almost doesn't matter what his background is.
Ooh, I have to jump in here. And by the way, the hat becomes you, Tim, that cynical hat. Here's the ugly secret in the underbelly of government. And I found out years ago, when you hire a consultant, I mean, it's just not low bid. You hire the consultant that you want. Guess what the first question is? I hired a consultant years ago, got the votes on the council. We did it to study victims of crime. We sat down and he said, what would you like the report to say?
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that that's question number one when they sit down with the staff. What does this need to say? What direction are you trying to go? What's your vision?
See, now that you're no longer in office, you've really become a truth teller here, haven't you, Eric Smith?
I occasionally told the truth in office. In fact, I think about 99% of the time. There could have been a time that I misspoke, like Brian Williams. You know? They asked me, was I in the service? I said, Army, ROTC, military band. I had to say the whole thing.
Give us a call with your thoughts on the top stories of the week, 549-2937. All right, let's talk for a minute. Lots of news happened regarding downtown development this week. We got more details about Jaguars owner Shad Khan's plans for the shipyards. There's also excitement about the newly completed South Bank Riverwalk and this new private venture called The Barge. It will be a floating party venue that will either anchor to the South Bank or anchor to the North Bank and float back and forth between, and you can host, you'll be able to host events and parties on this thing. The artist renderings looked great. But let's begin with the shipyards. A.G. Gankarski, under Shad Khan's plan, the city would give the 43-acre site on the North Bank to Khan's company, retain liability for any environmental issues. This could cost Jacksonville taxpayers up to $35 million in mitigation of the toxins that are still on the site from when shipbuilding used to go on there.
Exactly. And that's something that's needed to be done for a long time anyway. So it's, you know, an ancillary benefit of this deal. And I was at the DIA event this week. I was at the mayor's press conference. And, you know, there's a lot of generalities right now. The specifics are still being ironed out. You know, so what we know is promising, but it's really hard to get the specifics of the deal until you get through the process.
I got a call from a listener named Lori asking, why aren't the shipping companies that polluted the site being held accountable for cleanup of the site, even though it was many years ago? What about that?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
And I have no idea, actually. The it wouldn't surprise me if it has something to do with they were doing government work, you know. But basically, when land title passes, oftentimes the issues pass with it.
Yeah. Eric Smith.
You know, the old motel downtown that was torn down and has lain vacant for on a corner of State and Maine.
The Ambassador?
Yeah, no. It's still around. It's,
okay.
Hopefully it'll be a boutique hotel someday. But this was the old Parkview Inn, and it's torn down. And I think the city has found an old gas company that has reinvented itself over the years that's going to take part of the liability. The trick becomes finding a successor entity where you can tie that liability. That's much more for lawyers that are more specialized in that field than I am. It's something that this whole shipyards project is a wonderful thing. The details do need to be worked out in the greatest. Surely we can't have a third time and strike out completely on the shipyards. But there are other people. There's another entity that would like to do down there as at least part of it a boutique marina for ships the size of Shad Khan's and up. And in conjunction with that boutique Concierge Marina, they'd like to do a world festival retail complex. So I think the DIA may be hearing from more people than they thought. Of course, Shad's got the inside track.
That's going to be the fascinating bit. They're legally required to have at least a 30-day period. It can be longer. And basically, it's anybody who wants to submit proposals can. We tossed out some ideas on Jacksonville Business Journal website the other day. The ostrich farm idea seemed to gain some traction. So you can review those. But
and officially in the works is the USS Adams, the retired Navy warship. That would be anchored on the site. It would become a floating museum.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to your calls about the shipyards. Here's a tweet from a listener. It isn't whether or not we should do it. Where will the hundreds of millions of local money come from? That, of course, is the question. 549-2937. Linda in Mandarin. Go ahead, Linda.
Yes. I am very excited about the possibility of something going at the shipyards. I'm just hoping, because we haven't had anything viable so long, that we don't jump at just moving forward with one idea from Mr. Khan. I think we need to do our due diligence. We need to make sure that we have a special contracts law for any contract we draw with Mr. Khan to ensure that there's not a default clause where he can then take the land and take river front property rights in case something doesn't go right. I'm just very concerned that we're that we would be not as savvy as a billionaire's attorney that's going to make sure that if anything goes sideways, that Mr. Khan will come out on top of it. We'll have lost the land and the rights and everything. I just hope that the city treads carefully, just because they have a viable bidder in this. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda. Well, she makes a fair point. There has been some discussion about, and without taking sides, in the dispute between Khan's company and the owners of the Edgewood Bakery. There were some who felt that there's no way that those business owners could have foreseen that if things went badly, they wouldn't have the resources or the means to get into a legal dispute. What do you think?
I believe this is a different situation than the Edgewood Bakery situation, where the contract, I believe, was even verbal. In this case, you've got equal bargaining partners between, you know, Shad Khan and the city. You've had discussions. You've got a DIA process that's got to be followed, with multiple proposals perhaps being considered. And if another proposal comes in, that's advantageous to the city. Go ahead.
The city has had this issue before, though, of, exactly as the caller said, entering into deals where you have, you know, a New York real estate lawyer who comes down and contract looks great and is great until something happens, and then it turns out that, you know, a specialized real estate shark has written up a contract that, oh, is better for the billionaire than for the city.
But as you said, Eric, there is a lot of hope that the third time will finally be the charm.
Well, the lady is right to be apprehensive, and yet I'm pretty optimistic about Shad Khan. And even though you love your partner, even though he has a good track record in this city and appears to care a great deal about this city, you need good lawyers on both sides. And I would be concerned about our general counsel's office going up against whatever lawyers come in on the other side. And they're not, I've never been loath to hire outside counsel. I would hire some of the best outside counsel, because, and it's not to say, well, we don't trust Shad Khan. It's just to say that we have an obligation to the taxpayers to represent them well, and to foresee all the situations that could happen.
And here's a tweet from a listener. Either way, Khan's PR has taken a hit. The comment from the caller demonstrates a lack of trust.
There is an amazing little curve after the renderings came out, where there was this burst of excitement. And I find it interesting that there has been a little bit of a backlash of, you know, the idea of, well, don't just jump at it just because it's Shad Khan. Don't just give him the land.
Right.
Honestly, I would have expected a longer period of honeymoon.
Well, as we continue to follow that, let's talk about the excitement about another matter on the other side of the river. The new South Bank Riverwalk opened up yesterday to much fanfare, the mayor and other officials on hand. Also, Al and Don Emmerich, a local husband and wife team, unveiled their plans for the barge, a floating entertainment party venue that would float back and forth between both sides. What do you guys think about this?
You know, the Riverwalk thing needed to be done. I'm glad it's done. I think it's a coup for the area. And the barge, the same thing. I mean, that's something that, utilizing the river as an entertainment resource, is something that we could do more of. It sounds like a great idea. And, you know, we're looking to revitalize that entire area, the North Bank, the South Bank, use the river, to create something that is more world-class. And these two projects move us closer in that direction.
That phrase of using the river is interesting, because so often politicians, city leaders talk about, oh, the great asset we have in the river, where it is a great asset, but it's not being used. I mean, if you have people who come from out of town, you can't really take them to do or see or be on the river in any meaningful way. You know, it's there, but something like the barge actually, something like the barge and the Riverwalk actually provides that sort of connection.
And the idea about it that I talked to both of them about it, and the way they talk about how it will connect the two sides, it'll float back and forth and go to different points. That's appealing.
It's an awesome idea. But you know, 20 years ago, when I was felt like I was on the verge of getting a theme park for Jacksonville, I happened to talk to a senior vice president. I got to know him. At Disney, and I said, why can't we have a mini Disney in Jacksonville? He said, you know, he said, that's probably not a possibility, but you have something that money just can't buy that you've never utilized. It's that river. And to this day, we still have not utilized that river walk either in programming or the kinds of things you could do there or making it something that where people for a 120 miles around say, what's going on at the Riverwalk in Jacksonville today?
And could this be the thing? Just to give them a plug, if you go to their website, thebargejacks.com, their initial event, Beer, Bourbon, and Bacon, already I'm intrigued, is happening June 5th at Friendship Park on the South Bank. Larry in Orange Park. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. Just two comments. Net neutrality. Everybody talks about putting stuff onto the highway and not restricting its speed, but nobody's talking about when somebody tries to pull something off the highway. Like in my home, if I want to be able to stream Netflix, I have to have a certain download speed that Comcast is going to charge me more for than if I got the lower download speed. And if I want to use it for business applications, or if I do a ton of streaming, I'm going to pay even more. So the people putting it on may not be restricted, but I sure am, and I'm being restricted by the amount I can afford. And then on the shipyards, I'm sure that the people at Edgewood Bakery thought that they had good advice, good lawyers, a solid business contract, and they knew what was going to happen going forward in dealing with Mr. Kahn. He's a businessman. He takes no prisoners. And let's put it this way. I've seen the city of Jacksonville get in the same situation. They thought they had all the angles covered, all the details locked up, and what do they got? An empty piece of ground. Thanks,
Larry. Thank you so much.
One of the fascinating things in the Edgewood case is that they actually didn't. I mean, they it's unclear if they even consulted with legal counsel, and they had basically an email slash verbal sort of agreement that, being you know somewhat a skeptical sort of person, I can't. If you are entering into a contract with someone who's a billionaire, the idea that you don't have a contract that you at least think is ironclad seems a bit of a folly.
Well, I appreciate everyone's calls and comments today. A minute ago, we talked about bacon on the new barge. Mm. Speaking of that, we do have our weekly roundup now of the strange, bizarre, and just ridiculous from across the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Only in Florida does a man suck down 182 slices of bacon in 5 minutes. Competitive eating champion Matt Megatoad Stoney pulled off the feat Sunday in Daytona Beach. According to Major League Eating, which sanctions such events, Stoney is ranked second overall, holding the record for eating the most gyros, birthday cake, frozen yogurt, and pumpkin pie. His bacon record smashed the previous one held by Mark the Human Vacuum Lyle. He had 54 pieces in 2010.
Check Stoney for steroids.
Was it that rubbery bacon or the crispy kind?
Exactly. I hope it was crispy.
There should be a difference. Because
how do you decide what to focus on? Pumpkin pie, bacon, and frozen yogurt?
Only in Florida do people come down with leprosy. Yes, that they got from armadillos. Health officials in Volusia County say they have 3 cases, and they were all from armadillos, which are known to harbor the disease. Leprosy, a bacterial skin and nerve infection, can lead to tough patches and lesions on the skin. Humans apparently gave armadillos leprosy centuries ago. Other than people, they're the only other species that can still get it.
What are these people doing with armadillos?
I know, right?
Is that really true?
It's true. Only in Florida, Eric. Only in Florida are these things true. Only in Florida are couples being charged, yes, prosecuted with the crime of living together. State lawmakers are proposing legislation that would finally make it legal for unmarried couples to live in sin. Under current Florida law, it's punishable by a $500 fine and up to 60 days in jail for an unmarried man and woman to cohabitate. The law has been on the books for over 100 years. Previous efforts to repeal it have failed. Nearly 700 people have been charged over this in the last decade.
I'm surprised that the statewide prosecutor, with nothing better to do than prosecute little bingo parlors, doesn't have a statewide sting and haul in about 70,000 people.
I know.
That would be amazing.
Yes, let's fill those jails.
Thank you, A.G. Gankarski, Eric Smith, and Tim Givens. Guys, have fun this weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Still to come, a look at this spring's Veg Fest and also Red Moon Theater Festival. Two great events. We'll tell you about them in a moment.
WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through March 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Each spring, for 60 days, the Florida legislature tackles a year's worth of state business. On the agenda this law writing session, reforms to public education testing, the possible expansion of Medicaid, and hundreds of millions of dollars of mandated spending on the environment. On Monday, join Florida Public Radio for the Sunshine Edition, the 2015 Florida Legislature.
Monday morning at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT's Travel and Entertainment Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. The bidding begins March 10th and continues through March 16th. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Well, thousands are expected to turn out next weekend for one of the most unique festivals in town, the 5th annual Northeast Florida Veg Fest, happening in Riverside Park. This day-long free festival is overflowing with earth and animal-friendly fun, and it speaks to a community ready to take control of their health and the health of the planet. Girls Gone Green founder Julie Watkins, the creator of Veg Fest, here now with a preview. Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me on to talk about this festival.
So excited for you because this has grown every year. 7,000 people are coming to this.
We're hoping for at least 7,000. So last year is great. Well, I didn't do it last year because it was in November and it was coinciding with a couple other Veg Fests that were around the area. So we thought, hey, let's push it to spring or closer to spring. We thought the weather would be great. We'll try it in March. It's a different kind of feel, especially for Riverside Park. And we're excited. This is going to be the 5th one that we've done. And it grew, which is funny, from the first year when we thought we'd only have like 500 people from Jacksonville show up to this festival. We got over 2,000, but now,
over 7,000 to 8,000. You're a rock star. You are this area's foremost vegan celebrity, I think it's fair to say.
But I went through so many years of torment for being a vegan.
Look at you.
Yeah, that's
look
right.
Look at you, Julie
Watkins. Now look
Watkins.
At me. Take that, guys. It's all the shaming that they used to do.
It's amazing. I mean, and you've drawn so many people to your cause. People need to come out to this locally supported event. Great food, great music, lots of fun. a kids zone. You make this as exciting and fun
we
as possible.
Because we don't want people to be intimidated by taking control of their health or any environmental practices, sustainable living. We want to make it appealing to anyone and everyone. So we just have to thank our local sponsors, especially. They have been so good to us since the beginning, like Grassroots Natural Market, Bold City Brewery is going to be out there with four of their local craft beers, Native Sun Natural Foods Market, Dale Carson Law, Jacksonville Health and Wellness. This is you know, your community. And when you come out to the Veg Fest and you're spending money, you're investing in these businesses to grow and plant roots here and change the face of Jacksonville. I think these are game changers that come out to this festival.
You're also promoting the No Meat March this month, trying to get people to just not have meat this month or have less.
Yeah, we do a 31-day challenge. It's completely free. You go online, nomeatmarch.com, and you sign up for it. We send you tons of resources. We give you a weekly email with various recipes. So again, it gives you that sense of community that you're not doing it by yourself, that you've got a lot of folks in there with you. So when you sign up for No Meat March, then you come out to Veg Fest. Now you're going to have access to all this wonderful information that'll, again, help kind of get you through the month. And we're trying to change people's habits, make them a little bit better so they live longer, they feel better, they look good.
As good as you,
right?
And you can meet Julie at Veg Fest.
Oh, I'll be there all day.
Come on out. It's next Saturday, the 7th of March.
Yes.
All day in Riverside Park.
Right. And we've got VIP tickets. So go to nfvegfest.org and you can get that and get tons of free food and beer and a lot of grabbies.
Thanks,
freebies.
Julie.
Yes.
Kudos
Thank
to you on all the success.
That.
And another important festival we want to talk about, a celebration of diversity and community. The Ritz Theater and Museum, in partnership with Apex Theater Studios, presenting the premiere of the Red Moon Theater Festival this weekend, a 3-day affair with a mix of theatrical performances that honors the past and brings contemporary talents onto the stage. Very exciting. Show producer Ian Mayers is here along with actress Cassandra Freeman, a very successful actress. She made her film debut in Spike Lee's 2006 film Inside Man. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Alyssa. We're following the broccoli queen.
This is amazing. It's
tough.
I need my
broccoli. It's a tough follow. I'll be at the fest with a large bowl of dip.
I'll have a bucket of collard greens and biscuits.
No bacon in those collard greens.
That's right. And cornbread, but with the corn in it.
There you go. This gives you guys, everyone listening, just a hint of the talent that will be on the stage at Red Moon Theater Fest. Ian Mayers, what a coup getting Cassandra Freeman to be part of this. How did this all come together?
It was several cups of coffee in Brooklyn.
There you go.
I thought it would be a hard sell, but Cassie loves home. She's a Douglas Anderson graduate, a Florida State graduate, and an NYU graduate. And I thought I was going to have to spend a lot of time pitching this idea to her. And I said, I have this. She's like, I'll come home.
I was like, yes, I will come here. Absolutely. Because one of my dreams is to really create a bridge for artists in Jacksonville to New York. And, I mean, there are a lot of artists from Jacksonville who live in New York, too. And so we're all looking for this bridge.
There's
to
a community of you up in New York?
Oh, well,
there
absolutely.
Is. Wow. In fact, our latest Swamp Radio episode coming out in March is called Up North, where we profile all these New York
Isn't the Danny Joe jewelry line, aren't they from here too?
I believe they
are. There's a jewelry line. I need to meet them.
Yeah, they're from here. They're sisters from here. And they're all the rage in New York. But I'm getting off the topic.
Well, yeah, but there are a lot of performing artists up there for sure, musical theater and actors and singers and dancers and all that. But yeah, so we're here doing a show called Mountaintop by Katori Hall. Mountaintop is basically the last day in Martin Luther King's life. Uh-huh. But what happens in that hotel room? And let me tell you, y'all, it's a hoot. It'll make you cry. It is one of the most amazing, fantastic shows. It's a two-person show with myself and with another man named David Gerard, who's a hometown favorite actor here. So it's like a little bit of New York, a little bit of Jacksonville coming together, make some magic in there.
Right, and then we follow that up with the classic Our Town by Thornton Wilder, the most popular play in America.
Yes.
75 years old and is performed somewhere in America every day.
And Robert Arley White stars as the stage manager.
And we've created a multicultural cast that really reflects the community that we're living in today. It's our town.
It's beautiful.
So we have African American, Latino, Indian, you name it.
This is great. And the Ritz has been on a roll. This really adds to that momentum.
And that neighborhood has just got so much excitement building. Okay, I never thought in my lifetime there would be a Fresh Market 5 minutes from the Ritz.
Right.
Ooh, what about
there's
exactly.
an exciting, and I took Cassie to the Corner Bakery yesterday.
Bumped into the mayor.
Hello.
Said, good job. Look at this neighborhood. sir. It was not like this when I was here before. And also, the Ritz is like the Apollo to me of Jacksonville.
Yes, yes.
I just performed at the Apollo before I came down here, but it feels so good to be in our Apollo. So I'm hoping to do even more work like this. And oh, and our show is also inside of the museum. So our show will be surrounded with all of like the history of Jacksonville in the Mets historical play as well. So it's a lot to see.
And we've got a reception tonight from 6:30 to 8. Come right. down, there'll get a selfie with Cassie. Little wine, little cheese.
You're
selfie.
So beautiful, by the way.
You like, are sweet.
I want to get a selfie taken with you.
Fine with me. Radio has a great filter. Radio has a great filter.
Yeah, you see just stay away from Kelvin and you'll be fine. Right? Yeah.
I didn't sleep last night, so I'm full of jokes. But come out, y'all. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, this is great, Ian. Kudos. Now, as you said, the reception tonight and the performance schedule runs through the weekend.
Yes, our town is Saturday night at 8.
But
and
tonight's
Sunday
the only night.
Tonight's the Mountaintop, and then tomorrow in the afternoon we have Theater of Rice and Beans, a documentary about the Latino theater movement in New York, which was produced by University of Florida professor Tony Mata, who will be there for a Q&A after.
Now, by the way, why is it called Red Moon?
The Red Moon is an operetta, a famous Broadway operetta in the 20s, written by Rosamond and James Weldon Johnson.
Oh, there you go.
Of Jacksonville fame, and it was a vision of... an idealized society of racial harmony. And so we thought it was
amazing.
The perfect choice. And Red Moon, it's cool, baby. It's cool.
I mean, I know when I think it. Red Moon, I think cultural diversity. When
absolutely.
I think of Red Moon, I don't at all. But it's nice to think, though. I had no idea. James Weldon Johnson hits again.
Well, then that's a way to educate people, too, about our cultural legacy in this city. With
absolutely. Japan. And the Ritz is rich in cultural legacy. And it's really a place for all of us to gather.
And I just want to say my father, Mac Freeman Jr., was Jacksonville's first Black television news reporter. Over at WTLV 12. So come see his daughter. Yes, pass on the baton, people. Keeping the history rich at the Ritz Mountaintop tonight, 8 o'clock.
You guys are the best radio guests ever. Ever. You just did it all for me. All I had to do was say good morning, and that was about it. I didn't have to do anything.
Tonight, everybody.
Go on out and see the Red Moon Theater Festival. Amazing talent on stage at the Ritz Theater in downtown Jacksonville today through Sunday. Get your tickets at ritzjacksonville.com. Ian Mayers, Cassandra Freeman, thank you so much for closing out the week with us.
It's an honor.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
And that's our program. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers from the week. Our producer is Sean Birch. This show's theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Next on Diane Rehm, a panel of journalists joins Diane for analysis of the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We won't be on the air Monday. Instead, tune in at 9 for a special statewide radio show on the upcoming legislative session in Florida. That's Monday. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.